Welcome to episode 185 of Industry Misinterpretations with James Robertson and Michael Lucas Smith. This week we have part two of our conversation with Julian Fitzell from last week, where we discussed how to create small talk code that is portable across multiple dialects and the approach that the team doing Seaside has taken with grease and slime. If you have feedback on this or any other episode of Industry Misinterpretations, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. You can also head on over to iTunes and leave a comment for us. We would really appreciate it if you did that. You can head on over to Podcast Alley, cast a vote for the podcast. And of course, you can interact with us in the Industry Misinterpretations group of Facebook and the Small Talkers group at NAME.
Then there are other syntaxes as well that we have that other small talks don't have, like the literal namespace lookup stuff.
Yeah.
That's kind of creepy. I don't know. I actually don't know why that exists, the ability to do the hash squiggly bracket stuff, because you can put that in code just as fine. Anyway, and of course our dot syntax for accessing classes by their namespace name. Which sort of makes sense, although it could have been a message send. A lot of that stuff exists purely for optimizations. You know, if we have that there, then the compiler can create a deferred binding, and then when the code runs, the deferred binding can become a resolved binding, and then it won't have to look it up anymore until the system gets a flush command, in which case you've modified the system, and it becomes deferred binding again.
Okay.
So that's sort of a background optimization that takes place to make sure the namespaces don't really have any effect on the execution of your code.
Right.
Of course, it doesn't always work because sometimes those bindings can be relative and they have to stay deferred, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, the namespaces are an interesting one because, you know, that's obviously something that the other small talks have an interest in. I've been thinking about some of these things, too, just in terms of thinking about Monticello and Monticello 2 as well. Like, well, you know, I can see how They can be easily ported so that you can run it in any platform and load and file in on that platform. But as soon as you start sharing code between two platforms, well, you know, how are you going to deal with the syntax? Is always going to be an issue if you can't even compile the methods to discover they have, you know, to fix them, then you're stuck. So it's nice to see that we are getting closer on syntax, but there's still a way to go there. And it's also nice to see people dropping syntax, like the underscore assignment, for example. I mean, it's good to see both that people are adding the syntax where it's useful and then dropping the bits that aren't.
I kind of wish that namespaces were done with a different mindset. You know, if you prerequisite or import another namespace, then you have access to that stuff. Maybe you might want to alias it in some way, but having this global access to me, defeats the purpose of having namespacing. You know, essentially, you're just making the names of things longer, so it's just likely they conflict, as opposed to actually having a modular system that you can have two versions of the same class in the system at the same time.
Right. So more like Gillibrecht's stuff.
Well, there's kind of an interesting backstory to why some of that stuff got released in the state it was in, because if you cast your mind back to when 5i.0 came out, a bunch of stuff, including the namespace code, was very rough and didn't work real well. And at the time, a lot of people were wondering why what was then ObjectShare released VisualWorks 5i.0 with all that stuff in that state. And the reason it released all that stuff in that state was actually had to do with the stock market and the share price that ObjectShare's stock was at. That they had been there, some of the people in management had been doing some weird things with the financials, and that was going to break and hose the stock price down. So they wanted to have some positive news out there. So they went to engineering and product management and said, just release whatever we have now. We need good news.
Well, I mean, were they doing it because of Java?
No, this was all an inside baseball thing. That the namespace, the namespace where implementation was patterned off what Java did, because if you go back to some of the original documents,
right, and they're not, it's not useful namespacing what they did, because you really want to be able to mount stuff.
Right. In any case, it was patterned off Java partly because that was what was prevalent in kind of that was the meme that was out there at the time, and then everything was released in a rush because of internal company politics stuff.
I just think it's a shame because if they had, I guess in my mind, finished it, but who knows what they really wanted to achieve. Maybe they did achieve what they wanted. If they'd done it the way that I would have wanted it done, then there wouldn't have been any extra syntax. Right. And then we wouldn't have these issues. And namespaces would actually work a lot more like they do in VA and Gemstone. But, oh well. These are the sorts of issues that Greece has to deal with, essentially. I guess the philosophy of Greece is to not deal with it in many respects.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if the problem's not solvable, I mean, obviously everything is solvable at some level, but if we don't consider it reasonably solvable, we just avoid it.
Yeah.
And we try to assume ANSI, but where it's not, we work around it. So, like the exceptions, we just have a policy that we have as a GR error and a GR notification and so on, and we will only ever signal subclasses of those classes.
So then this pattern of platform-specific plug stuff in here also exists in C-side.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, there's a C-side Visual Works core for implementing a few MISC C-side things that need to exist to make C-side run on Visual Works. But it also gives us an opportunity to extend what C-side can do. For example, you can take a C-side WA URL and turn it into a Visual Works URI object by sending as URI.
Yep.
Or more importantly, you can render out a user message, one of our internationalized messages, instead of a straight string, and it will internationalize itself as it renders. So things like that, I think that's really neat. I think that's a pattern that I expect to see in more projects as time goes on.
Yeah, it seems to work fairly well. We spent quite a long time trying to sort out the package structure to do that, and eventually came up with this pattern that basically says that every package may have a platform-specific version of it, and it will always be loaded. It should always be loaded immediately after the generic version. Further on, the dependencies are such that the... So if C-side component depends on C-side core, then C-side squeak component depends on both the squeak version of core and component, if you know what I mean.
Right. Well, with the Monticello code that I implemented for Visual Works, this particular pattern that you've come up with is codified into Monticello. So if you have a prerequisite on C-side core and C-side Visual Works core exists, it will also include C-side Visual Works core as a prerequisite in store.
Okay.
Explicitly that reason.
Okay. So, I mean, we don't have that automated on the Squeak and Faro side yet, but it would be nice to. At the moment, we just ensure that the rules are such that that's true. But yeah, I mean, you ought to be able to determine and enforce that. Going back like a year, say, when we were starting to split it up into this many packages, and we weren't that consistent. We had stuff where some of them needed to be loaded before, and some of them needed to be loaded after, and it was just a nightmare. And eventually, we seemed to have come up with something that basically works. And every now and then, you know, you have to kind of implement it such that it works. But it seems to be a fairly good pattern. So we have to play games with having, you know, we have a few classes where we have basically you have to provide an implementation of the class. Obviously the Greece platform is the biggest one at the lowest level, and so there's a GR platform, and it has a class variable that holds the current platform, and each platform is expected to provide a subclass that implements all of these methods.
There's some interesting stuff in there. For example, secure hash 4.
Yeah.
Which C-side needs. And if your platform doesn't have a way to hash a string, tough luck. I guess you could just return the string.
You do the best you can, basically. I mean, the secure hash doesn't have to be like SHA or whatever, right? It can be, you know, whatever's the best secure hash you can come up with. I think that's basically being used for storing the password and comparing the password when you log into the admin interface, whatever.
And now a short break for David Buck's Design Minute.
This is David Buck with today's Symbaran Design Minute. In Smalltalk, it's possible to get undeclared variables into your code and have it still appear to work. Sometimes it happens when you're writing new code to reference a variable and forget to declare it later. But most often it happens when you're cleaning up code and rename or delete variables without changing the methods that reference them. You should frequently check your undeclared variables and clean them up. An undeclared instance or temporary variable will behave like a global and will have unexpected behavior. Undeclared globals are usually references to some classes that don't exist. They'll contain nil and can cause exceptions in your application. This has been the Symbaran Design Minute. Symbaran offers training and consulting in object-oriented development and the Smalltalk programming language. For more information, visit www.symbaran.com or email info@symbaran.com.
And now, back to the regular podcast.
There is stuff in here that's quite surprising that I would think, wow, that's different on Smalltalks.
I've had many of those moments in the last few years.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's take something really basic, the process stuff. There's cross-platform support for terminating process and asking if a process is terminated.
Yep.
I mean, which Smalltalks do that differently?
I can't actually remember which ones do what, but I actually think they're pretty non-standard, the process stuff.
Probably the ones that are closest would be VisualWorks, Squeak, and Pharo, since at least going far enough back, the process model was part of the core code of the original Smalltalk. So that's, you know, with evolution over time, those are probably fairly similar. But all the other Smalltalks were independently written.
I think the, like, Gemstone, I'm pretty sure, is pretty different process stuff.
Well, I know there used to be a very large amount that we had to do to support Seaside in 2.6 and 2.7. 2.9 was sort of a breath of fresh air because I started from scratch and only pulled across stuff that was absolutely needed based on the tests. And there is so much less required now. You know, there were masses and masses of chronology stuff that were required from Seaside before, simply because Squeak had it. So it was used.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody realized, and the people doing the ports didn't always report back. You know, they'd just work around it on their end, and so nothing was ever done to avoid it. But yeah, I mean, you get this pretty funny stuff that I just, you know, have always assumed is in every Smalltalk, and you find, like, you know, stream contents, for example, on collection doesn't exist everywhere. And even just asking for a read stream on a string, which I use all the time, the read stream method didn't exist everywhere. I think we've added it to Grease now.
I remember you sent out a PDF at one point that had a bunch of incompatibilities for discussion. I don't have that anymore.
I might be able to find it in my email here. So I have the wrong laptop, so I don't actually have the file on my computer. But I guess if I just search for your name, I'll probably find it.
Well, just in general, do you think that sort of thing is getting better over time, worse over time, or staying about the same?
Which sort of thing?
This level of incompatibility with things that you would think of as common, like the read stream thing you just brought up, is there any iteration towards improvement there that you think is happening across the Smalltalks?
I think we are getting better slowly, yeah. I mean, I think the more of these large projects there are that run across, the more we are moving in that direction.
That's what's interesting to me is that years ago there was the ANSI process, and then, you know, ANSI came out with its document, which all the vendors said, yes, we'll follow that, and then for the most part generally ignored. But interestingly enough, when large projects like Seaside come around, there's some actual pressure to start conforming because there's a desire to support something like Seaside across various Smalltalk implementations. And it's just easier to fix your Smalltalk than to work your way around the issue. So you've got sort of the legalistic approach of ANSI, which, you know, puts out a roadmap, but people kind of say, yeah, yeah, and then, you know, wave at it. And then there's an actual physical project like Seaside that seems to me to actually do a much better job than ANSI of forcing change.
Well, it's not just Greece, though. I think perhaps Monticello plays an even bigger part in this than that.
Well, sure, I'm bringing Seaside and Greece up as examples, but I think it's just things that there's a general desire to see across small talks are forcing more change than I think the ANSI process ever did.
Yeah.
Or perhaps awareness, right? I mean, the issues that are now understood by the Seaside development team for writing cross small talk code, only a handful of people knew that stuff before, but a lot of people know it now. And it's kind of written out in a way that can be consumed by other projects.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a interest or a willingness, or I mean, it was a bit more theoretical before, right? Because when you're writing an application, I mean, realistically, most applications you're not ever going to port it from one, or you're not going to regularly port it from one small talk to another. Maybe at some point you change your mind, you want to move it to another one, but you're not usually writing an application. At least so far, we haven't seen this where people are trying to get it to run on all the applications, all the platforms at once. It's only really frameworks and tools that want to be compatible across. And, you know, I mean, there were things like refactoring browser, which it would have been nice, you know, that could have been the thing that spurred it, but it just seems like there are more tools now that are working across the platforms. And partly that, I think, is the open source movement. We have that to thank because, you know, there's a desire to sort of get it out and get it spread in a way that, you know, if you're in a commercial environment, maybe you're developing a framework and you just want to keep it. You only want it to run your platform because it's value for your platform.
It's actually an interesting point you bring up, but I don't think I've ever encountered any kind of IP in VisualWorks that we would say, well, we definitely wouldn't ever want that used by any other small talk because it's ours. Although there is stuff that is quite clearly our IP, and I doubt you would ever be able to convince legal to open it, right? And in many respects, some of the stuff that is our IP might have been more successful if it had been ported. Take Web Toolkit, for example, right? It implements SSPs. Now, if SSPs, that implementation of SSPs had been ported to Squeak and Faro, maybe Seaside would never have even existed. Well, not Faro, because Faro didn't exist back then, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's possible.
Or it's not so much the Seaside wouldn't have existed. It's that I think if you take any arbitrary thing like that, I mean, take another good example would be OpenTalk, where it's a way of sending messages between, you know, Smalltalk images. And, IBM and now Instantiations, of course, has their own way of doing that. I forget the name that's used in there, but they have their own inter-Smalltalk messaging scheme as well. If either of those had ever been open-sourced, then there probably would have been a desire on the part of the other vendor to just say, you know, why should we write our own? We'll just port that. So instead, you end up with these multiple incompatible things across Smalltalks when there's no real value for that. I mean, having OpenTalk be specific to VisualWorks and Object Studio, I don't think really gets anybody any value. There's no lock-in provided for by it that I can see, and it doesn't really provide a whole heck of a lot of value. It'd be simpler if it just worked everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's, you know, there's just different approaches to how you approach those things. It's either you try to get as many people using it as possible, or you try to keep it as something that makes your product more valuable than another. I mean, you know, we can argue about which one's the right one and the wrong one, but...
Another strategy that you've employed with Seaside is in cases where some piece of functionality can't be done on a small talk, it's sort of a pluggable thing as well. Like, in particular, I'm thinking about Seaside Flow, which is this whole continuations thing that has been part of Seaside from the get-go, but isn't necessarily a required feature anymore.
Right.
And so, I mean, I assume what VA Smalltalk doesn't implement Flow and may never implement Flow?
Correct.
Yeah, and that's a neat way because I remember this of getting around, you know, how do we get Seaside on VA Smalltalk? Because there was always this discussion of, Well, maybe they'll never be able to have Seaside because they can't do continuations. Well, you just redefined what Seaside is. You just said, well, Seaside doesn't necessarily have to have continuations. And now they can have Seaside.
Or most of it, anyway.
Yeah, most of it. You've just sent me some PDFs.
Yeah, I think those
Grease discussions.
Those are the PDFs that I was emailing out around before. So if any of them are of interest to you, you can bring them up.
Yeah, I'll probably, since we've discussed them on this podcast, what I'll do is I'll push them to the server and put them in the show notes.
Oh, cool. There were some interesting things in here. Like, let's see, one in particular that I seem to remember. Comma on collection is this super uber thing in Squeak.
Oh, yes, right.
But it's not anywhere else. Well, I guess it is in Faro, but it's sort of a given.
Yeah, it's defined, so in ANSI, if I recall correctly, it's defined as being, you know, it's for sequenced collections, basically. It's a comma concatenation implies ordering, whereas Squeak is right. Perfectly happy to use it with any collection.
Right, it sort of treats it more as a... it's not really a union either.
No, I mean where they are sequenced collections, it is a concatenation. But where they're
and where they're, know, when they're whatever, unsequenced, it becomes a union.
Yeah.
And then when it's keyed, it becomes a key merge.
Oh, yeah, do they do it in dictionaries too? I don't even have.
Yeah. So this was one of those things that just got dropped from Grease's usage and Seaside's usage because implementing this on everyone else's platforms would have been quite disruptive, I think is the way to put it.
Very invasive at the very least, yeah.
Yeah, people just didn't like it. I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of a, we're trying to add useful stuff, but at the same time, look at it and see, you know, is it ugly? Because, you know, sometimes it's being added to one platform and it's just ugly. And, you know, we don't want to propagate ugliness. So there's this sort of balance of, you know, trying to apply an aesthetic eye to it and just think, is this really something we want everybody to start using?
Now a short interlude for this week's Squeak News with Randall Schwartz.
This is Randall Schwartz here with your latest Squeak News. You can find all this news and more at news.squeak.org. Squeak 4.1 has now been released. This version combines the license change occurring in the 4.0 release with the development work that has been going on while the relicensing process took place. Much of the work in this release has focused on fundamental improvements. Major achievements are the integration of COG's closure implementation, the improved UI look and feel, the new anti-aliased fonts, the core library improvements, and the modularity advances. One key focus for this release was to address the issues that have been known to frustrate developers using Squeak for the first time. A much improved set of UI widgets, the new menu bar including the fast search control, integrated help, improved test coverage, more class and method comments, and integrated syntax highlighting all make the system more accessible. The new full closures, the new traits implementation, multiple improvements to the collections and stream classes, the new number parser hierarchy all help make development easier and produce cleaner, faster code. Deploying your completed applications will be made easier by the work done on making many modules unloadable and by support for other cleanup activities. To download the Squeak 4.1 release, go to the squeak.org homepage and use the download links on the right-hand side. For Squeak Weekly News, this is Randall Schwartz. You can also check out my Smalltalk-related blog at methodsandmessages.vox.com.
And now, back to the regular podcast.
There's another side to this, which I thought was really interesting, is deciding which stuff Grease cares about and which stuff Grease doesn't care about. So there was a proposal for standardized messages, backspace a new page on character class. And I raised this one in the mailing list because... why do you care? In you know, it's one of those things where if you're writing a Seaside application, why do you care about the new page character?
Well, you don't. That's
right.
But you know, we're trying to make it useful beyond Seaside too, so we're trying to look at it a bit more broadly than that. I mean, those ones came out of that work I was doing with John, basically going through and looking at, well, what do we have that's, as we were going through looking at the extensions that they had added, we also sort of looked at other protocols on those classes. So we were looking at basically the ANSI classes, right? We're looking at collections, we're looking at exceptions, we're looking at streams, and seeing what is there that's defined in several of the platforms that's common, and therefore we could sort of give a slight push to and get consistent on all the platforms. And so those came out of that because several of the platforms did have it or had something similar but with a different name. And so we thought, well, let's see if we can get everyone to agree on one name. But
well, there was in the end,
I think we decided it just wasn't that important.
Well, there was a case of naming where we sort of unfortunately had to go with the lesser version, which was the instance variable named put.
Yep.
Is just instvar named and instvar named put, simply because more platforms already had instvar name than instance variable named.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, one of those democratic decisions of, well, and it sort of matches instvar at and instvar at put.
Right, you know, which I also find, I mean, I find the abbreviated versions sort of painful to look at. That's right.
Well, you know, there's a method in which I forgot to mention at some point or other, but next int on random. I mean, why abbreviate int?
Right.
Integer to int, you know. So, but this sort of stuff happens, and, you know, maybe over time we'll fix it a lot.
I suspect most of those happened back in the early days of Smalltalk when there was still a fair amount of influence coming out of the C Pascal world, where your mindset was that there's a limited amount of storage space for variable names.
Well, and you know, and you think of the type as int because you've been typing
right,
int in
exactly.
C or whatever for so long. It's not an integer, it's an int.
Yeah. So this is a really interesting effort. Greece is probably going to be forever ongoing, I suspect. As more things become standardized across the small talk.
Well, actually, I had a question related to that, and that is that Greece came out of the Seaside cross-dialect work, and from the conversation, it sounds like there's usage beyond Seaside now. How much is Greece being used beyond Seaside?
I mean, I think, to be honest, it's not being used that extensively beyond the projects that Seaside developers are in some way involved in. So when I did the Pierre and Magritte ports to VA last fall, I used it for that. So the new versions of Magritte and Pierre are using it. The Monticello 2 development is starting to use it. A number of, I think, Lucas's and Philippe's projects are using it as well. I'm not yet aware of you know, people beyond that really starting to use it yet.
But what that means is that big projects like Pierre and Magritte, which up until this point have, I think there's a Gemstone port of those, and there's sort of a nominal VisualWorks port of Magritte, at least, and Pierre, but I don't think they're fully functional. But that means that over time, those projects should be easier to move between small talks because the same thing that's made Seaside a little easier to port is going to start happening with these things.
That's the hope, yeah. I mean, the hope is that, you know, you already have Greece installed eventually, and so the other things are going to just work. Now, of course, you'll then run into the problem that you'll have, you know, some version X of Magritte and version Y of Seaside, and they'll depend on different versions of Greece, you know, then... it's a whole other nightmare.
Well, you can, you know, solving one problem always creates a new one.
Yeah, but yeah, we'll deal with that one when it comes out. And you know, we're trying to find a. It's like Greece is not something where the interesting thing is that it's not usually that technically difficult. It's like it's political. It's who can we convince people that this is a good idea? You know, somebody has to. Often one of the platforms has to bend in order to come to an agreement. And so it's not something that benefits from having 300 different opinions on. So it's, you know, it's something that we're kind of, I mean, it was only last fall after ESUG that we started to think, hey, let's push this out for other people to start using. So it's really, we're only starting to push it that way. And at this point, it's still, you know, there's a small number of people from each vendor group that are kind of discussing it and trying to evolve it, and over time it'll become more open and more people will use it and more people will contribute to it. But it needs
Who's contributing to Greece right now?
Let me think. We've got John O'Keefe from Instantiations, probably both Dale and James from Gemstone, Paolo Bonzini for GNU. Primarily myself and a little bit Lucas and Philippe for the Faro side, and you for Syncon. Is that about it? I think that's about it.
Do you run into any license issues with the contributions coming from GNU Smalltalk? I mean, I don't want to get into a whole license argument or discussion here, but I'm just curious if that comes up since there have recently been conversations going on about those issues.
Well,
implementations of the methods don't get thrown around. Just, you know, this is something that Greece needs and your platform needs to implement.
Okay.
Sort of thing.
That answers the question for me, yeah.
Mostly. I mean, we do have some shared code, but none of it has come out of GNU. I mean, it's possible that Paolo has contributed methods, but... Several
implementations of these methods have ended up being identical, not because they were copied, but because there's really only one way to do them.
Assuming your platform is the same in terms of the underlying.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, I don't know. It's an evolution, and you know, hopefully more people will start using it, and eventually it'll be sort of wide open in terms of debate and contribution, some kind of a process for what goes in it. At the moment, we're just trying to keep it a little, it's kind of on the edge. We encourage people to use it and try it out and report problems, but we're trying to let it get its feet before it goes kind of wide out and free for all.
Right. So I just wanted to make one small observation. What seems to be kind of evolving out of this is almost a small talk community process from the grassroots up.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be nice if it did sort of evolve into that.
Yeah. And what I particularly like about the Greece phenomena is that there's a desire to not have Greece in year 2110 or something, you know, the ultimate desire is that if there is something in there in Greece that we can make and put into each platform, and then remove from Greece,
right?
We will, and that's different to any other of these sorts of processes that's happened before.
Right, exactly. I mean, Greece fundamentally is the unit tests of the API, not the code to make it work.
Potentially one day, Greece might just be unit tests, compliance between platforms.
Absolutely. I mean, that would be beautiful.
It would be wonderful, but I mean, being pragmatic, it's probably not going to happen.
No, it probably isn't. But I mean, certainly we encourage the vendors or the all the platforms where possible to add the methods they find useful into their core. But, you know, in the end, it's sort of up to them what they put in and what they don't. So. And that the fact that they have that choice, I think, is partly what has made it fairly easy for the vendors to adopt. And you know, as I say, we're pragmatic. If a vendor comes back and says there is no way I can implement, you know, I can't add that method there because that conflicts with something else, I can't implement that, then you know, it's like, well, okay, we'll rename it or we'll do something else.
Yeah, that's been one of the more impressive parts from the seaside end when we've discovered something that just can't be done at this point in time. CISO just adapts. They just go and change it. And they update the Greece. They update the tests. They update everything. That's fantastic. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything more. And I think it's one of the things where we can have more rapid turnaround with Monticello and with Greece and with the unit testing. More rapid turnaround to all the different vendors to find out what works and what doesn't work.
Exactly. And I mean, we want the ports up to date, so we want that to be as easy as possible for everybody. It doesn't do anybody any good to have different versions running everywhere. That's just confusing. I guess the thing, having said that there's only a small number of people who are kind of discussing what to add to Greece at the moment, I should then say that what Seaside does and what I would encourage other people to do if they're trying it is to make sure that they prefix any additions that they're adding for their project. Like, so Seaside adds a whole bunch of stuff to the platform, the GR platform class, for example, that it uses for its own benefit, and it just prefixes all those methods with Seaside. And so that allows us to have, you know, there's Magritte methods and the Seaside methods and so on. And then over time, we can look at those and say, well, you know, some of those are actually useful, and we can basically pull them up by removing the prefix and deprecate the prefixed ones and just have them call the unprefixed ones. So... you know, I'd encourage people who are trying it out to extend the platform in the ways that your program needs to be compatible. And, you know, that gives us a good way to start to collect the things that people are finding useful and see where there's commonality and that kind of thing.
And I would just add one thing to that, is that if you do that and you make a test and then you have a stub method, comment the stub method with what you expect the damn thing to do.
Absolutely.
The name of the method is not enough to infer what it's going to do.
Right. I mean, ideally you have unit tests too, but
yeah.
But yes, absolutely. A comment in the stub is an excellent idea.
All right. Well, I guess on that note, I think we'll try to wrap it up. It's been great having you on, Julie, and I think it's been a great conversation.
Yeah, pleasure as always.
Yeah, thanks, Julie.
And now a short break for this week's Smalltalk Jobs Report.
I'm James T. Savage, and this is the Smalltalk Jobs Report. Perth, Australia. CCK Financial Solutions Limited is looking for a senior software engineer who has experience with Smalltalk, SDLC, technical documentation, has excellent communication skills, and has demonstrated experience in application development within a commercial environment. It is considered a plus if you have experience in Java, C++, Gemstone, treasury knowledge, and banking or financial services. The job listed in this report is just one example of the Smalltalk positions that are currently open across the world. For more details, visit our public directory page at xrl.us/smalltalkjobs, or read my blog, Message Sends with an Undefined Object. Good luck with your job hunting.
If you enjoyed this week's podcast, please tell other people about it. We'd love to have more Smalltalkers and more developers learning about Smalltalk through the Industry Misinterpretations podcast. If you have feedback, send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. Head on over to Facebook, join the Industry Misinterpretations group. Head on over to Ning and join the Smalltalkers group. Or head on over to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for the podcast. In the meantime, have fun with Smalltalk.